Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Whatever, hoof, it's over, hoof. And they have to... It's not a word.
It is a word. Phil Nguyen from Australia, a fellow Aussie. Aussie Phil, in fact. Which tournament has the best court speed for spectators to watch?
Ooh. That's a hard one.
I'm going to answer grass.
Really?
100%. Everything should be on grass. Nah. You know there's going to be a new Berlin grass tournament? Yeah, and next year, the Steffi Graf Stadium.
I know. It's
I'm
in,
so excited.
In a state of Birmingham.
Berlin. Have you ever, Did you ever play the Berlin tournament when it was there?
Yeah, my first WTA tournament was, I got a wild card into the qualies in Berlin.
So
and I qualified.
Yeah.
And I lost to Shuai Peng.
Peng Shuai. Who's still playing? You're both still playing.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful country club too.
Is it?
A country club. It's a tennis club.
Yeah, but it's like in the fancy part of,
it's gorgeous.
Of Berlin.
Yeah,
Grunewald.
There you go.
Are you going to play it?
I guess if I'm still playing tennis.
I'm going to play. I'll come watch.
You're going to I played there.
I
played there many times. It's a beautiful stadium and Steffi won that tournament like 9 times or something.
Is that what they call it? They're calling it.
Well, she
Steffi
won a lot
Graf.
Of things 9
well,
times.
Well, it used to be on clay.
We used to be on clay, and it used to be so freaking cold. One of the coldest places
yeah.
I've ever.
Berlin is
it was
a cold
early,
place,
and it's early.
No, it would be cold or hot. It was like yeah. it was like Melbourne weather. I was like, what the?
Berlin's like practically in Poland. So like when people are like Germany, you know, people don't have a sense of like what the latitudes and longitudes of things
Thanks
in Europe
for telling
are.
Us yeah. That.
Well, but most Americans don't know because most
That's
Americans
true.
Don't have like a passport.
Our geographical reporter,
thank you,
Caitlin Thompson.
Reporting live from the 30th latitude, which is practically the Arctic Circle in Berlin, Caitlin Thompson. Yeah. No, but I think that's like, I'm thrilled. And I think it's in the middle of the summer.
It's
so
later in
yeah,
the year.
It's instead of Birmingham.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's going to be 2 weeks before Wimbledon.
If I have a coaching job at that point, and I'm going to commit, who's Sam, who's not a big lover of grass.
Can't imagine
I'm going to make her play Berlin.
Good.
Even if she played qualies. We're
but
going to Berlin.
I'm turning 40 next year.
But let's get back to
the
question.
Oh, okay.
Phil
oh, wow.
Nguyen's question. Best for spectators.
Well, you think it's grass.
I think it's Indian Wells, honestly.
Mm.
And I want to say not Indian Wells during the day, but when it gets a tad cooler, because when it's really
it's
hot
for the fucking spectators.
Well, when it's hot, the ball flies and it's really hard to control in the first two or three rounds. And I always argue the best matches to watch are in the first few rounds where mm-hmm. you can see players that are in the top 10, you can see them up close.
Yeah.
That would be the most fun for me. Whereas if you sit in Arthur Ashe on the last
oh,
row,
terrible,
what
yeah.
you're seeing too.
It also smells bad and
I don't know.
Noisy.
Yeah. But and then Indian Wells, once it cools down a little bit and players have really started to feel the ball, it's really awesome to watch. It's a good court speed. You can hit through the ball. You can also play spin. It takes on the slice.
It's quite slow. It's a pretty gritty service.
Yes, it is pretty gritty, but you can hit through the court if you want to. So I like Indian Wells.
Indian
I have to
Wells
say.
Is
and it's almost never windy unless it's the windiest place in the world. Remember that Zvonareva Ivanovic
yeah.
well,
match?
It's
desert.
Oh God, that was
it's,
amazing.
It's desert.
That
wind.
Was amazing.
I did. I Lisa Raymond and I played a doubles final there, and we literally didn't warm up for the match. It was the wind was so bad. We went on court
yeah.
and we started here. And we what's the point? And we literally didn't warm up for our final because it was that windy.
Really?
And in the stadium, it was better. So we're yeah. like, well, we'll use the 5-minute warm up in the final.
Did you
to
win?
Like,
Caitlin. Obviously. Great I'm question. Just making sure.
But yeah, we didn't warm up. That's how bad the wind is.
Yeah.
So it's desert. It's either blowing a gale to the point of like not being able to hit the ball, or it's perfect. It is the best tournament as a spectator to go and watch.
Surface
no
aside, just the spectator aspect of that, you can see all the top 10. Yes. You can see everyone. They make the practice courts really, really accessible.
Cool, yeah.
And it's cool to just go and watch anybody warming up, playing. I remember watching Svetlana Kuznetsova and your pal Yelena Yankovic warming up inches from my
face. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And
it's
both of
them
are
like
talking
to coaches. Then you have this huge grass area where you can watch players warm up for their warm-ups, and for their practices is also cool, especially if you're interested generally in sport to see what the players are
and
doing with their trainers.
You can have overlooking a court.
You can. You can have Nobu.
Why, also, why would you have Nobu?
Because you
can sit in a restaurant.
Ass.
Bonu. As we call it in Germany.
I will say, I think sitting and watching actually in Shenzhen at the WTA finals for people, that's a good court as well. You can play fast or slow on that
court. And
there's
lots of seats available.
And,
can we talk about that?
Okay, let's...
That was not a good look.
Okay, so here's the problem. The WTA know that because behind the court, the only way to get to those seats behind the court, which is obviously in the camera angle,
where you want
people to be seated and where people want to sit, was you had to be accredited to sit there. So you had to have accreditation. Nobody from the public could sit in those seats.
That's dumb.
Because of the way the configuration of the stadium was, and then they built the court, and then they put these seats, that were temporary seats behind the court, because it's not an indoor stadium for tennis. It's an indoor stadium, right?
Yeah.
And so they built these temporary smaller seats behind the court, but they were that's for us, for the players' coaches and the the VIPs and the people that could get down into the players' area with badges could only sit there.
Right, well, but it still wasn't full.
No,
it was fairly filled, but it still wasn't full. I watched yesterday the London O2 Arena where like I don't know how many people fit in there, 10,000, and people are yelling and screaming. And you know what is so interesting to me every time I watch
tennis?
People
make money in London.
I wouldn't have in the, as you said, we're both in New York. The Fed Cup finals was in the middle of the night. It was 3 a.m. When Ayla Tomljanovic took the court. And it's interesting to me every time how the audience's atmosphere transfers through the TV. I wouldn't have stayed awake for that, but the people and the atmosphere got me hooked in that I felt like this was the most important, urgent thing in the world right now. And if I fell asleep, I would miss a thing.
Yeah.
And I think that really transfers. And the same thing with I love, as I said, I'm a tennis fanatic. I watch everything. Mm-hmm. And I sat down and I woke up and I put on my alarm to watch the WTA finals in Shenzhen. And after one set, I turned it off. The only match that I did watch was Andreescu and Halep because that was an amazing match. And all the others, I didn't sit from first point through last. And that's strange because I watched the stupidest thing just because I love it. And it's the atmosphere of the audience not transferring through the TV.
I completely agree with you. And I think one of the things that is a real hardship, and it gets to an earlier question, part of an earlier question, which is how do you develop fanship?
How do you? That's a good
one
question.
One of the interesting
things
about...
Well, it's the first year in Shenzhen.
But how do you...
The Asia
swing generally,
to be done.
I think, has a bit... I mean, one thing that's great, and I think the WTA in particular should be thankful for, and I'm sure is the big checks being cut by a lot of these sporting federations and sponsors who are bringing the tour to Asia. Obviously, before it was in Shenzhen, it was in Singapore. Sashido, the Japanese, cosmetics manufacturer, sponsoring the year-end championships. But it does have an issue in terms of the buy-in from the public. Maybe the tickets, to your point, are overpriced. Maybe it's a situation where, not enough local fans. It's
Singapore was, I mean, I don't know if you remember, I was an alternate when the finals was in Istanbul. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there watching all the matches because there was no chance of me getting in. It was the best thing. The only thing I could think of, Andrea, please next year play well and come back here. It was
But the tickets were so cheap in Istanbul.
I don't care. I don't care about to make money otherwise. Get the revenues from TV and get the revenues from sponsors, but make the atmosphere great. That's my whole point.
Well, I can say that they know it was an issue. They understand, and they're very, very aware of it. So we'll
Since
see
when
what
are you the spokeswoman of the WTA?
No, because we brought it up.
I'm just joking.
Because we brought it up. Oh, trust me, the WTA know. If there's anyone going to give them shit, it's me. But they're very aware of the optics and how it looked for them. And look, China's throwing money left and right at a million events over there, and it's not like. Everyone says it has some of the, and if not the most billionaires in the world now are in China. Mm-hmm. But there's also an incredibly a lot of people that are not wealthy.
Mm.
So, you know, to buy tickets, it's not easy there. But yeah. I think you're right. The fan base will grow there because it's now 10 years that it's going to be there. So guess what? If they don't get it after the third year, you have to start thinking this was probably not the right area.
Yeah. But I mean, they've had two tournaments this year there already. So yeah. They've had the Shenzhen tournament for, I want to say, 4 years.
Yeah.
They have two tournaments this year there. Plus the final, so a fan base should be established by now. I don't say that this is the first year, we cut them some slack, but this is something that the WTA has to work on, yep. I think.
We'll see what happens next year.
Well, this is sort of a question kind of related. We touched on this a little bit. Jody Sharkey asks, do WTA end of year championships matter anymore? It obviously lacks the hype of a slam, even the hype of the ATP finals. It's nice icing on the cake for rising stars, but motivation, injury risk, and format seem an issue. I don't know what he means by format.
I think group stages. The amount of matches.
I actually like the round robin. I think it's
interesting. I like it too. It's different.
Because you always sort of get to see all of the desirable matchups. And it's interesting to see who brings the fight, even if they're
And it would be hard. Imagine you have only 8 players there and you play a KO. And after the first
draw,
day, half of the people are gone already.
Totally.
That you want to see. And half of the people could be the biggest stars of our sports. You know?
It's actually, as a fan, it is the best tournament to go to. I mean, if you want to see the best players in the world play and guarantee them playing.
But who's
going
to go to Shenzhen for that?
I'm not talking about...
I go to the
going
ATP
somewhere.
Finals.
Although I will say, if you live in Hong Kong, it's talk about having that's a shitstorm there. But it's literally a ferry ride from Hong Kong. So if you lived in Hong Kong, get over to Shenzhen next year if you're a tennis fan. You know, I mean, literally, I flew into Hong Kong, took a ferry, and I was like there. So it's like you seeing every top player playing against each other every day, guaranteed.
Mm.
Well, unfortunately, this year we had a few defaults. That was crazy. That was really crazy.
How many
but
the people who got in were great also. I mean, Kiki Bertens made it in and she was...
Well, she won. That's the only loss that Ash Barty had was to Kiki Bertens. So that just shows you the depth of women's tennis.
And also, you know what I think is a real issue for...
And Kenin. She played unbelievable. Yeah, she gave...
two great matches.
Svitolina run for her money,
totally.
Well, you know, and literally a run for a 4.45 million dollars check. But I think also an issue is the whole depth of women's tennis, which is great for the sport, I think really hurts the women in this case.
I agree.
Because the last 3 months after the US Open, when the men were kind of chilling, the top men, because half of them were already qualified, I think Zverev, who had arguably not a great year, was qualified already the second week after the US Open. How did he do that? Yeah. I don't know. But the women were fighting until Moscow, which is 1 week before the final.
And
so they are grinding, and every year. So they are grinding themselves down to the ground just to make it to the finals. And then here they are, and their body is failing them.
I could
not
believe Kiki Bertens, who played 35 tournaments this year, or something insane.
Yes.
Came to Shenzhen having been in the final of the Elite Trophy
Zhuhai.
2 days before.
Yes.
And still managed to win a match. Like, that was
Well,
miraculous.
She was seeing the ball so well. I mean.
Yeah, maybe. But I think on the other hand, how did she possibly, you know.
She probably has.
Excuse me. Did you see the prize money?
Yeah. But
if
I think,
can't get up for that check, then there's something you need to quit.
I don't think it's about, I mean, I'm not a professional tennis player, but I can't imagine the money is the only motivator.
No, I don't think so either.
It's a huge motivator.
Yeah, but
well.
If it's your...
Sorry,
I know it is, but it's also your body. I mean, I do anything for money, literally, but... But my body...
Let's not
when
talk
I,
about standing on the corner again with this hashtag Jonathan sign.
What? Oh, yeah, well, but I don't get any money from it. I just get intellectual property. Yeah.
Okay.
No, but the players do think about it, though. It's very important.
I'm sure they
do.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe,
One more Louis Vuitton back in your pocket.
They are choking. They are choking to get into that tournament. Literally, I mean, last year there was 4 players trying to make 3 spots, and they all went to Moscow. Speaking of playing to the end, Sloane Stephens, Kiki Bertens, Karolina Pliskova, and Svitolina couldn't even play because she couldn't get in.
Yeah.
So she went to Bali and had a holiday and said, "Oh fuck it, my year's over."
Yeah,
and literally went and was on holiday.
Let me paint.
And then got in. Those 3 players flew to Moscow after playing 5 weeks in a row in Asia to try and make the championships. Yeah. You think they don't want to get in?
No, I get it.
Are you kidding? I mean, a Karolina Pliskova doesn't, and Sloane Stephens, they don't need to, it's not like they're breaking the bank, like they're worried about paying their mortgages.
Totally.
They're busting their ass, and they all lost first round.
Yeah.
They all lost in Moscow first round, because you know why? They were all choking to get into that
really
tournament.
To
so don't tell me that doesn't mean something to
I don't,
them.
No.
I don't think it means something. No. I'm just saying it's sad that that's the main motivator, because then you turn it on and the stands are empty. What I would propose is a vastly tinier paycheck, and you have the finals at Madison Square Garden, which is where they used to have it, and then you have a crazy crowd, well, and then you get people motivated for a totally different reason. Like, going to London for the O2 finals,
yes,
the men are rested because they haven't had to race to qualify as hard as the women, but also...
They come out to a full stadium.
The stadium is packed, and also the tournament is scheduled so intelligently. O2 Arena is part of London proper. It's not like Wimbledon, where it's like essentially in a different village. Yeah. It's in the city. You can go do your day's work, and then like have a couple of beers and go watch incredible tennis for like two night sessions. Yes. And it really does feel like it's fan service.
It is so smart. And also think about it. When I was young, when I was watching these tournaments, my like the craziest matches I remember was Sharapova against Justine and I in Madrid at the finals.
Right.
Where Sharapova won the finals, I think, against Clijsters and Anaya back to back, and I remember freaking out. I remember freaking out because you know how Spanish audience is. Also, they were losing their heads. They were, I feel like they were throwing chairs at one point onto the court.
No, that's curious.
But no, but it was, but it was that's so fun. And I, to be fair, I don't think that Chinese people are not able to do that. I think the Chinese get
incredible. No.
I think Chinese people are amazing when you have Chinese players there.
Yes, they are.
When in Beijing, when Shuai Zhang is playing, when Sasai Zhang is playing, it's incredible atmosphere. The problem is there hasn't grown. Tennis tradition has not grown yet. It's about to, but it's still a little early. Unless you don't have Chinese players at these finals and at these, what I mean, Chan when
I
they played, there was
the doubles.
Exactly,
got a lot of
that was the best atmosphere because a Chinese player was involved.
Well, technically Taipei, they're from Taiwan.
No. But when Sam and Shui were playing, it was like, Jiayou Zheng Shui, Jiayou Zheng Shui, like loud and
Mandarin.
Proud, and you know they were fully into it. That was the biggest and loudest crowd of the week.
Yes, exactly.
Was when Shui and Sam were playing doubles.
Yes. This I'm going to put a pin in this because
so do we need Lina to come back?
Yeah, always we need Lina.
We always need Nila. Nila. I'm tired.
Osmarina Maciel writes, I'd like you to discuss prize money in doubles. I love watching it and always check the prize money. Some of them maybe don't even pay expenses to the winners. They deserve more. I mean, I'm talking to a double specialist, obviously.
This is one for Renee.
Renee?
Take it home.
My friend, that I wish I was still playing because the doubles prize money, yes, although it's very small, it's fucking amazing compared to what it used to be. I mean, Lisa Raymond and I, we won a lot of premier events and we were like jumping out of our skin with a $35,000 check. Now it's like $125,000 to win a premier mandatory. I'd be like, are you serious? That's more than what I won to win the Australian Open.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, the WTA finals, if you won every match, which Kiki Mladenovic and Babos did, you split $1 million as a pair. Oh my fucking God. Are you kidding me? That is crazy. I literally texted Lisa Raymond. I said, get your ass into gear. Let's go. Like, come back.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. That's amazing money. So yeah, could it be more? Obviously, but you know, we're like Andrea is saying, we're trying to get more money at WTA events.
Well, I think doubles is so fun to watch.
I love to watch it too, I have to say.
Many spectators, if they play tennis, they more likely play doubles just because it's
especially
a little bit
the
more,
older they
especially
get.
The older you get. What do you think about the idea that I've espoused on occasion, which is like making doubles mandatory?
Oh, wow. You see how many people are getting injured if they would have to play doubles on top. I don't think that would be good for the player's health. Unless they would schedule it. The only way you can do that, if you would cut down drastically
like
on the amount of tournaments
and
have them 2 weeks, and then you can do that. Like in Indian Wells, Miami, all the top players are playing doubles because they have a day of break.
So fun.
And they know they have
so
much. And they have like 4 or 5 days until Miami.
Yeah.
And that's where everyone plays. And it's so much fun to watch. And you see all the doubles matches are packed.
Yeah.
All doubles matches are packed. And both on men's and women's. And that's the only thing. But that would mean a drastic change in the whole tour where you would cut down on all the tournaments and then have them be two-week events.
Drastical. I'm into a drastical change. I can think of at least 15 tournaments.
My English is questionable
You're
today.
Doing great. Nobody else is speaking in their second language or third or fourth or whatever it is for you. I think
you haven't had enough drinks to start speaking French.
It's my third language, just by the way. Just an FYI.
I'm amazing. I'll
clap on.
And I look good.
And I look good.
And I have abs.
I would love to get rid of 20 tournaments on the schedule and just make everyone really important and make everyone really bought in, make everyone joint like a gender.
Formula One.
I agree.
Kind
yeah,
of
just
thing.
Like every single one has to be, like, you have to meet a certain threshold. Like, you have to be able to sell it out. You have to be able to have,
yeah, I agree,
you know, a facility that's good enough. Like, going to Miami this year, the facility is a flaming train wreck garbage
it
dump.
It was so bad.
Like, nobody
Wait
should go to Miami as their first
Sorry.
Train.
A what?
Flaming train wreck garbage dump.
It's trash. Trash, trash.
I think that's what she said. It's
yeah,
a flaming.
Bad. I would not want for my friends who, many of whom have never gone to a tennis tournament, but
to
some,
make that their first.
Be like, oh, what should I go to? I'm usually like Indian Wells, or if you're in Europe,
you're trying
go
to show
anything.
Me your biceps,
no,
but
I'm
continually
sweating like crazy. It's the coffee. I'm sweating like,
God,
like a beast.
Calm
I
down.
I know, it's awful. I need to get Botox in my armpits, but that's a different story. Anyway, my it's point true. Is, I feel like you should have to have like a certain rubric of tennis check boxes to be able to have a tournament, and then just make it really awesome, and then it wouldn't be all about the Grand Slams, and then equal pay would be such a
absolutely.
Then you take
but
away
how many years does that?
Maybe so. You keep some of the smaller events.
How many?
You
years?
Don't know what my 10
make
top
the
are.
Make the smaller events exhibition tournaments, or allow them to pay appearance fees to the players, because so far they are officially not
how
allowed
many
to play appearance. I'm just saying technically
I
they are not allowed to
Nobody's
pay appearance fees. So if you would allow that, it would turn maybe more into an exhibition kind of thing, but the smaller events could maybe survive. I don't know. But this is something we're talking about where you have to somebody. First of all, tennis had to come under one roof. And then you would have to have a really strong personality that is like exactly.
I think I'm looking at you. Come on.
Are you looking at Renee or at me?
I'm looking right at the commissioner.
No,
das
but I think
das Boot.
Das Commissioner.
Yeah.
And I would only speak with a very strong German accent.
There you go. People would really respect your authority. What's the latest news with Kim Clijsters and her injury? Is she still planning on a comeback? Love your podcast. And it's always best when Andrej Petković is with you too.
Wait, is Kim
Thank you,
injured?
Keith Holland. Yes, Kim is injured and she's not playing in January.
Yeah,
she
she's put a stop to the comeback in January, so she's going to push it back a little bit. But,
What's
you know, we know that's going to happen.
Well,
shit, I mean, I don't know.
I
honestly don't know. But well, it's called being having to train really hard again to get back into phenomenal shape.
I don't think it's going to work. Yeah. I always said it before, I say it again.
It's tough.
I think to get back into the thing is, you know what the problem is? I know it with myself. She's used to training 4 or 5 hours a day. And she's had a long break, and now she comes back and she thinks she can still do it. I had to learn gradually that I can't do that anymore. Mm. That
after
if
three
I
kids?
Do, and especially after three kids, I don't even want to get into that. Hello, environment. I'm just joking, by the way. Please have as many kids as you want. But just, you know, I had to learn that gradually, that whenever I would practice 4 or 5 hours a day, I would get injured. And I think Kim has to relearn that now, because she's still in her mindset when she was 29, 30, and thinks she can still do that. But now she isn't anymore.
Listen,
and
anyone
it's
on the
be
wrong
a long
side
learning
of 33,
curve.
34 learns your body just abandons
deteriorates.
You.
Deteriorates. Bye-bye. Yeah, yeah, mine's gone bye-bye, which is why, you know, I saw that check for the doubles at the championships. And I thought, my mind was there, but my body was like, are you serious? Can you go for the practice now and your knee's not swollen like a like a watermelon?
I know, you wouldn't even come dancing the other night because you were like, my knee's in.
Okay, shut up.
It's true. Okay, Mike McIntyre and Leon Thomas Braun want you to talk about the rise of the North, my native land, not my home, but my native land, Canada.
Wait, when did we start talking about Game of Thrones?
Oh, that was a
winter
while ago.
King in the
coming.
North.
Winter is coming.
That
Bianca.
Was my
Bianca, talk about needing to get her shit together as far as injuries are concerned.
Yeah, she's...
That's the biggest...
The mind is there.
She's got
everything
she
except
literally
for
has,
the body right now.
She literally has one of the strongest minds I've ever seen in a player as far as... being able to handle the moment. I mean,
absolutely.
That US Open, still to this day, the atmosphere and that final and the noise that I experienced as a spectator sitting on the side of the court of that match, still to this day, blows my mind that she could handle that moment.
She played
being so young.
The head is unbelievable.
The tennis is there.
The tennis is there.
Yeah.
The body is not.
A rotator cuff injury, and now she's got
Now she's meniscus.
Calf, or is it meniscus?
No, a meniscus. No, she did her meniscus at the championships.
Yeah, these are big, crucial
and
joints
as Andrea
ligaments.
And I know, you do the meniscus, it's like 10 years from now, as I can attest, to being in an MRI machine 3 days ago.
Yeah.
Don't. It I mean, that's just setting a precedent of
the problem. Is she's so young. If you have a, that's why I have problems with my knees. I had an ACL when I was 19, and then you just tear on your cartilage from that moment on. So if you're lucky enough to stay healthy, somewhat healthy until 25, and then you start tearing up your cartilage, you might get through to 32 with like somewhat of an okay body.
That was me.
And but that's it. But even you felt it, right? And I had it with 19, so already when I was 24, 25, my knees were already in chronic pain all the time.
It's great.
Chronic.
We're going to keep a list of all the neologisms you're creating.
I'm going to come into your Webster dictionary and tear it from inside.
I'm coming for your dictionary. Das Kommissar will invent words and you will like it. What would you do if you're her? She's got a rotator cuff. She's now got a meniscus. Would you say like she's got probably two rotator cuffs, but one of them real fucked up. So what would you sort of advise her as somebody who has...
Well, I don't know what I would advise her, but you know what my theory on that is? Because I feel like what your strength is in life, philosophically, somehow is also your weakness.
Philosophically is a word.
But it's true. But you're laughing at me. But I am arguably physically very strong when at my best. And I was one of the players that was the most injury prone. And I feel like Bianca, you saw it at the US Open, when she's physically at her best, she tears people apart physically. She's strong. She's quick.
Yeah.
She's a strong girl, but she's still quick. She's dynamic. She's explosive. But apparently she struggles with injuries. So I don't know what to advise her, because I was very similar. And one guy said to me when I was 18, oh, you're like a racehorse. And I was like, yeah, I am. And then he was like, well, you know, racehorses, the minute they have a cold, they get put down. I was like, oh my God, bacteria, stay away from me. But it is kind of true. What I want to say, it's extreme, but it is true. A racehorse, when it's running well, it's incredible. And you see the athleticism, and the minute something's wrong, they have an inflamed whatever hoof, it's over. Oof. And they have to... It's not a word.
It is a word.
So why is it funny? Just,
the way you said it.
You also held up your pinky, which is really funny. Just your little hoof.
Audience, they are bullying me. They are bullying foreigners.
It was like you were so serious, and then you're like, with your little pinky.
I'm being bullied by my own colleagues.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
One thing also that was discussed was Muguruza.
Yes.
Question.
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah, I want to read this in full because it's a lengthy one. Spana writes, what do you see happening to Muguruza next season? Do you see her teaming up with Martinez? Would that be good for her? Is spending her offseason climbing Kilimanjaro instead of lying on a beach in the Maldives a positive? And what happened with Martinez and Pliskova? First of all, I'm going to take the middle, which is like, fuck off. Anybody can do whatever they want in the offseason, period.
So, well, like, Dick Nowitzki did that before he won the ring at the Dallas Mavericks. So I feel like it's a good... Maybe she read his book.
Boom.
So, bam.
Okay. Muguruza Martinez, great pair. She won Wimbledon with Martinez in her corner. You have some involvement in this triangle. What can you share with us, Renee?
Absolutely nada.
What?
No, I swear to God.
Come on.
I promise you on my mother's house, which is in lot of trouble right now.
Yes.
I swear, honestly. I don't know a thing. I haven't spoken to Carolina. Yeah. I haven't spoken to Conchita about it. It's only just happened a week ago. I saw them, obviously, in China.
If you had to speculate, I mean, they had a good season together.
I honest to God, have no clue.
Yeah.
Petco has theories, though, don't you?
About what now?
Carolina.
Sorry, I was spaced out for a second.
In other words, she wasn't listening to what I was saying.
Fine. No. I was because I thought for some reason we were talking about Muguruza. That's why I was confused.
We are.
We're gonna get to Muguruza.
Okay, so what I just why Pliskova and Martinez split? I don't know. My theory is, but that's just me coming again from a philosophical kind of end. Carolina is a kind of a low energy person in a sense of that she's not low energy. When she's on court, she's not very emotional. That's why they call her the ice queen. Yeah. So I always feel like it's good to have
queen,
a...
not the ice queen.
But also ice, I feel like that's...
you just hashtagged her a different one.
Well, you know what I mean, but she is like very stoic, exactly. And I feel like it's always good to have a balance in energy. So when you have a coach that like gives you a push of energy in certain moments, and I feel like Conchita was the same way when she was a player and also seems to be very similar to that as a coach. So maybe that's just... as I said, pure speculation. Maybe there was like a lack of energy in a sense, because I felt like they did a good work. But then also I think Carolina has high expectations. I think she expects to win a slam before an Osaka wins two, before Andreescu wins one. So I feel like there probably was a certain kind of disappointment. So even though she did have a great season, she finished number two in the world, she might have had some expectations not met in any form of way. But again, this is pure speculations, and you know her better than I do.
As I said, I don't have any inside information on it. I mean, look, you know.
I don't either, but I'm making things up.
My split with her in March was, I didn't expect that either. So because I thought, you know, I'd brought a pretty good sort of balance to her being on court. And I think one of the things that she's missing is the ability to finish some of these points against some of these players. And that, for me, is moving forward. I think that she has to improve her ability to move forward at the net. I think it's one of the things that Azarenka did so well when she won a couple of Australian Opens. You know, she was a beast from the back of the court and didn't miss, but she took balls out of the air.
She
had one of the best swinging forehand volleys.
Yeah. She closed
the points out and used her tenacity in that way and her intensity that way to beat, you know, the Sharapovas and players like that in the final. Whereas Carolina needs to find that balance of, can she hit winners from the back of the court? Sure, of course. But she also, you know, is not the quickest. She moves. She actually, her movement over the last 12 months, and I give credit to Zula, her trainer, is fantastic. Yeah. But it becomes a little bit sideways and not forward.
Yeah.
So the urgency to finish the point, I think, is very important for her. And also, you know, sort of working on the variety of her serve, I think, is a necessity. And it's up in the head as well. It's like refusing to lose. So I think there's a few things, and I swear to you, I promise you, I absolutely know nothing. I don't know who she's going to sign. I'm going to take a guess, and I literally know nothing. I think, you know, maybe Dominika Sibakova, who's not playing anymore, and there's rumors that she may retire.
Yeah.
Her coach is probably going to be needing a job, and he's a good guy. And
what's his name?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but maybe he's in the mix. I don't know. That would be a good choice for her, maybe.
Well, this kind of relates to a question that Bryce McCarthy asks, and it kind of speaks to the Muguruza Martinez like question, which is like, obviously there was a successful pair in the past. Do you go back and sort of rekindle things? The question is, how is initial contact to see if there's mutual interest in working between a player and a coach? You guys can both speak to this.
Is it like
dating? Like, what is it?
Well,
like?
It's changed really, because in my days,
Bumble? Yeah, you just swipe right on coaches.
Well, no, the way it worked for me was I would just go up to people and ask them or call them up when I knew they were free. I was not the one that would go up to people that were already kindled up. I was never that type. I just didn't like to do that. But now you don't have to do that as a player anymore, because the agents do everything for you.
Oh, interesting.
I was so surprised to hear that. But apparently the coaches have agents and they just shuffle them around. Yeah. So I saw Muguruza was working with Nishikori, just split with his coach. So I saw Muguruza was doing a few, I don't know if it's a long-term thing, but then she was working for a few weeks with his old coach, and they both have the same agent. Mm-hmm. It's Oliver van Lindonk, a Dutch guy who's working for IMG. So I see a lot of these things where the agents is really the
100%.
Main, and that was not, I don't know how it was in your, but in my days that was not a issue at all. I mean, that was just not a thing, and I think that's why also Sasha Bain is getting so many jobs, because I think he's working with an agent too, or he's very well connected in the whole IMG octagon world.
100%.
So he's on the metaphorical bumble of coaching
with the top tiered players often their management. Like, I know that, like, Max Eisenbud, mm-hmm. you know, he has, like, a rotation of a couple of coaches that mm-hmm. he just keeps ciphering off to his players.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
You know, just one after the other after the other. And so if you're in that sort of if you're in that sphere, you just keep getting passed around. Mm. And then you've got some coaches that actively sort of, like you said, sort of weasel up to a player and start sucking up to them a little mm-hmm. bit and sort of saying, oh, I could do yeah. a better job with you and,
yes.
you know, and blah, blah, blah. And then you've got some players that, you know, are not happy with their coaches and they see somebody else. And you have to remember, players practice with each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So they're often on the court with other coaches so and they might see something
yes,
or
that
like the way that they are. Yeah. I mean, with the way it happened with me with Carolina is I have no idea. Mm. She just called me and was like, hey, would you come to Singapore with me? This was, you know, a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh, yeah.
How did okay. you get your number, though?
Ich weiß nicht. I don't know.
You can always ask numbers of other players and coaches, most yeah. of them through
Everyone's
the WTA.
Like
yeah.
Sam Stoza called me. Obviously, she has
okay, my
phone
but you
number.
Know each other. Yeah. But just to go back to Muguruza and Conchita, I think that would be a great match. Obviously, Conchita has a way of speaking to her that works. She won Wimbledon.
In Spanish.
But then also, to be fair, she came on for that tournament. She didn't do the work beforehand. That was Sam Sumik. And I know he's very controversial. Mm-hmm. And their whole relationship was apparently very weird in a sense that they had these weird coaching timeouts where they were both very emotional mm-hmm. and she didn't
it's very
listen.
Toxic.
So, but he did do the work. I don't like when a coach comes on, you know, for a tournament and the player wins the tournament.
And then everyone's like,
it's
oh,
like
it's
being
coach.
In love for the first 2 weeks. Everything is great. But then the real work starts and then you can see if things are matching up and
right.
then you can see if personalities sure. are matching up and so on and so forth. But clearly, and that's to her credit, to Conchita's credit, she has a language, a kind of language and something, a motivational speech, whatever, or she just brought calm to Muguruza because that's, for me, to come back to my philosophical view of things, that would be a better match where Garbiñe is very emotional
yeah.
and very intense, and maybe Conchita could bring a little calm into her, which helped during Wimbledon.
Well,
yeah, and
she
I
was
think
happy.
She had
my observation of Garbiñe that year that she won Wimbledon. She was happy.
She seemed relaxed.
She looked
too.
Yeah,
super
she
relaxed.
Relaxed. Yeah.
She was smiling. She would say hello to everybody. Like you see her, we see her around the ground. She's not exactly
she's kind of scowly.
She's not exactly mm-hmm. Andrea Petkovic walking around the courts. Like
yeah.
you know what
Miss
I mean?
Miss Congeniality.
Yeah,
over here.
Miss Congeniality.
Yeah. I'm licking the mic.
Great.
We
whatever
heard.
That means. Well, it was kind of like when
but
Andy Murray was working with Amélie Mauresmo, and you're like, oh, Andy Murray is like so dour and like can mm-hmm. be hard on himself, and then Amélie Mauresmo would be like, you know, just smile, and it was such a nice contrast in personality types. You were kind of like, there has to be some.
She was pretty serious. She's pretty serious.
Yeah, but she also like talked a lot about like the philosophy of like being happy within yourself. I mean, he's even talked about like just the different perspectives of getting Yvonne Lendl, who's very intense and
yeah,
very
exactly.
Well, Yvonne doesn't take any shit. You say,
yeah.
Oh, well, I tried to hit that ball there. I don't care. It
yeah.
doesn't mm-hmm. go there. Hit it here.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. shut up and don't fucking gesture to
I
me.
I heard a great story about Yvonne Lendl. Did you tell it to me? He lives in Connecticut and golfs most days, and he was entering into his golf club's Scrabble championships.
I did not tell you this.
And he
story
lost in the first year of it, and so then he spent the next year like training intensely to be like a Scrabble champion. Swear.
That sounds
it's a story
like
I've heard.
Man.
I don't know if that's true, but it's
that
a story.
We'll find out. Maybe we'll
we have
get
to
him.
Yeah, we have to get him on the podcast.
Oh, he would be unbelievable.
There's a couple more questions I want to get to, and then we're going to run out of time because I'm going to cut this into two episodes, obviously,
it's
because
awesome.
It's a
yeah.
year ender.
Yeah.
We really have to talk about that beginning of the whole thing. I didn't even know we were on, and there was a lot of fucking
we
and
can,
shitting
she,
going.
We can edit a lot of that.
We do a lot
yeah.
of
we
that.
Do a
okay,
lot of
good.
That. But one of the questions aimed at you was, has the energy in the locker room changed in the course of your career? Have people become more open? I think one of the points the poster was making was about social media and the way
yeah.
people have sort of become more, I don't know, themselves or at least comfortable with a version of themselves mm-hmm. being out in the world. Is that something you notice?
I do think that the locker room has become friendly, although I don't know because
really?
I've always been okay with everyone. But what I do feel like is, and I think it has more to do with a generational sort of change that the new generation that is coming up has already been, because back in the days, for example, I didn't play juniors, so I didn't have friends from juniors that much. So
didn't have friends.
But I still don't have friends.
Quote, unquote.
All my friend.
Okay.
That's my favorite thing. Anyways, so but I can see that nowadays, because tennis becomes professional so early, you meet the players in the in the juniors that you later on seniors tour. And I can see that a lot of friendships form that have been going on for years already, and they're 20 and they're hanging out in the locker room. You can see they shared a lot of things.
Cool. It's a different, I would say, because I have been around, as you've already established in this podcast, how old I am. I did play 22 years, so I did really see the...
Yeah, you branched a lot of the shift. Different generations. I branched
a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. And I would say back in the day, I mean, we used to have, for example, every year at Eastbourne, we would have a performance. We would literally, all the play... You don't know this?
Like you're at camp and everyone's...
This is a story from Racket Magazine.
The Monte Carlo.
We would put on performances.
Like a talent show?
Yeah. The players would get, and the staff and whomever wanted to be a part of a Broadway production, we would go to the local Eastbourne Theatre, and all the players and everyone would go, and we would do performances. Do you think that could happen now? No chance. Maybe. Or maybe I'll put it out there
for the
players.
That's cool.
But literally, we would pretty much take the piss of everybody on tour.
Yeah.
I mean, and some of the instances, quote unquote, that had happened on tour, we would put up there on the theatre.
Sure.
And obviously it never got out, but we would sort of pay out on each other during that event. And
I think the younger generation would do that if you would have somebody who was like, hey guys, you know what we should do?
We played a softball game every year, the staff of the WTA against the players.
That seems like a danger to meniscuses.
That sounds like a very dangerous
thing. No, but that was literally, I have photos of like the players would play against the staff. Every year we would walk across the street at the Miami tournament, the Lipton as it was known then, and we would play a game of softball.
I don't even know what softball is. It's like
baseball.
But with a big ball.
Oh, and you throw it from underneath.
Yes.
That's
there you go.
Terrible look.
Very good.
Did you guys watch the NFL game yesterday?
No.
Oh my God, it was amazing. You don't like American football?
I stopped watching with all the wife beating and...
Oh yeah, that's true. But it was so good. Okay, anyways.
I like that you like sports. I love that we
has no choice. Her significant other right now is obsessed with tennis, with everything sport.
Every sport. But I love American football. It's so strategic. Yeah. That's what I love. But I do have my problems with the whole politics behind it. And they are, because I met this one football, the way they are exploited is a joke.
Their
bodies, and that's, oh my God.
3 years.
So I do feel like a certain kind of, I feel bad a little bit when I watch that. I enjoy it so much because it's such a cool sport.
It's a very cool sport.
From the strategic, because I like, that's what I like about tennis also, is the strategy. The strategy.
How do you
and
say
this
that in German?
Strategie. Strategie.
It's the same.
It's the same. This is a very random question, but this kind of speaks to what we're talking about. Caroline Watson asks, I'd like you to pick a random midweek ladies pennants team and keep us updated on their progress. What does that mean? Is that a sport that
I
understand?
Midweek
is that like
ladies.
Rugby or something?
No, it's a tennis team. So in Australia, you play pennant matches.
What does that mean?
Which is like club team matches.
So Racket could like sponsor like a random like New South Wales recreational
country
team.
We
should fucking
do
that. Yeah. Okay, well, listeners, please send us some suggestions. And also, we're only doing it if you are going to rename your team the Racketeers. And we will send you T-shirts.
Send you T-shirts.
That's
all.
And
they're going to say dick kicks on the back.
And I don't know if they're going to allow hashtags on the back. But
if
they
do
it.
We'll do it.
Grab them by the penis.
That's our new hashtag for this
midweek
episode.
Ladies would mean Wednesday afternoon or morning. The ladies get together. They bring a bit of tea. They bring a few scones and a couple of little sandwiches.
That sounds great.
Cake.
And they play against each other and they whine and complain about each other. And then after the match, they all sit down, have a cup of tea and scone and a sandwich. And then they complain about their husbands and their marriages and then they go home.
That sounds great.
Yeah. My, I don't know who it was, my cousin or so. My mom told me when I told her that I have this great therapist now that Caitlin recommended.
We have the same therapist. And
mental therapist.
And that he helped me so much. She said, well, back in the day, I think it was my mom. She was like, well, back in the day, you would just bake a cake and go to your neighbor. That was your therapist. And I was like, fair point, Mom, but I'd rather pay to speak about my feelings.
Totally. And nobody's going to gossip about it at the town square.
And P.S. and by the way, Mom, of course you had baked the cake and went to the neighbors. Is why I'm going to therapy.
Probably.
Exactly. All right. This is a very random question, but we're going to end on it unless you guys have other things you want to discuss. Georgia Burdell, who also coincidentally, I gather, lives in Georgia, asks, why don't women use their non-dominant arm to guide and hit their forehands in recreational tennis?
What?
Yeah, that's all. Moreover, when will...
Well, moreover...
Alta, which is the league tennis, kind of similar to ladies' pennants, get Hawkeye to curb the cheaters? I will hang up and wait for an answer. Obviously, this is a joke question, but it does raise something that I get asked about a lot and that we saw a little bit of this week when we had a major dust-up in one of the challengers in Vegas, which is sort of the sportsmanship that goes on the courts.
Didn't Michael Moe get disqualified?
Michael Moe got disqualified. Yeah. Didn't he chuck a racket?
He threw it at a linesman,
I guess.
Yeah. So it sounds a little... I'm thinking a little abusive.
Aggressive. Not great. Juniors, there's tons of cheating.
Tons. Yeah.
I mean,
tons.
Agar Radwanska in her last episode talked about
it. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to the Racket Magazine, Radwanska episode, because she talks about that. She's like, why would you cheat? I don't understand it. But hey, so whenever I think about that, whenever we talk, people bring that up or you talk about it, and I have very good friends that have kids that are playing in junior tournaments, friends in Florida, for example, that are like playing these 12 and under tournaments and like, there's so much cheating and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it'll all come out in the wash, people. Because when you hear Radwanska, Wimbledon finalist, top 10 for her whole career, made $20 million, didn't cheat as a junior. So all you juniors out there that are listening, or all the parents of juniors that are out there listening, if your kids are cheat, hashtag fuck you.
But,
seriously, because
but you think
if you're
a 9-year-old kid, yes. I will tell you two stories that are amazing, by the way. Once I cheated, not deliberately.
Hashtag fuck you.
No, I will tell you what happened. It was 5-4 for me and the other girl was playing moonballs. And it was back then in juniors, they tried the no ad rule. Mm. So it was juice. So it was at the same time match point for me and game point for her to go back to 5-all. And she hit such a big moonball that she lobbed me at the net. And
That's called a lob.
Yeah, no, not at the net. I was at the baseline. Sorry, I was at the baseline. So she lobbed me at the baseline. So the ball went so high that it hit the fence before I could hit it. And she thought it was out. It wasn't out. It was in. But she just came to the net and raised her hand out. And I went and shook it. So I won the match. That was one thing. But it's not the funny story.
Cheated.
The funny story is about, I'm not sure I can tell this, but I'm going to.
What?
I don't care.
Come on.
Alexander Zverev.
Yes.
And Alexander Bublik. So I played Hopman Cup with Sasha Zverev, and he tells me the story about how Bublik once, when they played juniors against each other, punched him in the face after the match.
What?
It's a true story. So I asked him, like, why did he punch you in the face? He's like, I don't know. I beat him like 2-2.
From juniors.
In juniors. They were like 14 or something. I beat him like 2-2, and then I went to the net to shake his hand, and he came up, and he just like, but with a fist, not like slapped him. He like punched him with the fist in his face. I was like, oh my God. So I kind of forget the story. So 3 months later, I'm at Indian Wells and I see, and I know him because he practiced at the same academy. And I see him pass and I'm like, hey, Sasha, I have to ask you something. So I'm like, is it true that you punched Zverev when you were juniors? And he's like, yeah, totally. But do you know what he did? And I was like, no, what did he do? So apparently what Sasha did, whenever he started losing, he didn't cheat, like steal the balls. But whenever he started losing, he would just say another score.
What?
And you know they don't have umpires in juniors.
Oh,
so what they have to do, they have to start from the score that both remember, which was 1-1 in the first set. So instead of 5-1 for Bublik, it was 1-1. And they had to replay the match, and Bublik couldn't concentrate anymore.
Wow.
And he lost 2-2. That was
the
true part.
So that goes against my theory about if you don't cheat in juniors.
Well, and then I asked Zverev, and he kind of was defensive. He's like, Bublik is lying, whatever. But I kind of tend to believe the story is true, because why would somebody just randomly
punch you in the face
with the fist as a 14-year-old? I mean, he is Russian, and I kind of appreciate that he's like a badass, apparently. But that's a crazy story, isn't
it?
That
is a crazy story. I know of a professional. I won't mention names, because one of the people...
Should I have not mentioned names?
No, of course you should.
Okay. No. Because one of the people that told me this story is somebody I really like and respect.
It's
and
Chris Evert.
No, shut up. Yeah, Chris. Yeah, I can
it's
see
Lindsay
Chris.
Davenport.
Can't you see Chris cheating?
She doesn't need to cheat.
She couldn't live with herself. One of them was part of a team. And this person told me the story.
Mm. Billie Jean King.
No, shut up. And halt die Klappe. And basically cheated a line call at the French Open in a semi-final.
Wait, were there no umpires?
Yeah, and said, here's the ball mark, and circled it.
What?
It was nothing to do. It was not the ball mark. They ended up winning the match and won the tournament.
It was Gabriela Sabatini.
And they won the tournament.
Renee, are you talking about yourself?
Yes. You did it. Wow, you are a detective.
Well, you're assholes because you know it's the only Grand Slam I didn't win, so no. But they won the tournament, and they should have been out of the tournament in the semifinals. So you know what? What goes around comes around. That's how I feel. So if you cheat and you can live with yourself, good for you. And if you cheat and you can't live with yourself, you won't do it. I could never cheat. I could never do that. Like, you know, people that like touch the ball and like, yeah. I didn't touch my rackets. Like, how do you live with yourself?
I thought the moral of the story like, was going to be like, and now that person has butt cancer or something.
Well, I don't know how they are, but they will.
It's true. You have to look at yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
And you have to decide.
Now they have hiccups forever and their lives are destroyed.
Well, and they were known to cheat often in different circumstances. So that person, you know what it is?
Liesl Huber.
They have no respect on tour.
Nadia Petrova.
I'm not going to tell you, but it's like.
Blink in Morse code if I get the name right.
I'll tell you later.
All right. Well, we'll give anybody who guesses it right a free.
Oh, my God, yes.
Listen, I'll tell you what, for all the juniors out there, though, that do listen and all the parents that, come on.
Sorry for all the cursing if you're a junior who listens to this, by the way.
Don't let, yes. Well, I'm sure they
don't let juniors listen to this.
Don't let your baby grow up to listen to us. but don't let your kids cheat. Come
on.
Agreed. You know, I mean.
What a terrible, terrible lesson come on. You're letting them learn.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good because one day they will have linesmen and they will have Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And they'll start to complain and whine.
And may God have mercy on their souls.
May he.
All right.
Or
on
she.
That
she.
Note, let's wrap this wonderful two-part edition year in review podcast up with our
Please
illustrious guest, fashion correspondent, genuinely nuts. So, lady to my right, Andrea, thank you for coming to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. We love that you are living part time now here in New York.
It's all happening here in New York. All right. Thanks for listening. See you next year.
Cheers.
And that's it for this episode of the Racket Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Ruggieri and the team at Acast. Find us at racketmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.